Speaking of...
2 minutes late.
You're fine.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I was just saying to Janet, we were doing our morning huddle, and I said, is there anything a supernova for the supernova? I got a call. It's dead. Because I have no idea. We ran out of time during our meeting. I'm well. How are you?
Good. So what's on your mind this morning?
Well, I think that the biggest thing on my mind with regard to this call is that Eric came back from New York, and he came in and said, I gave it a lot of thought. I spent a couple of days with my dad, who his business was his dad's. And I think that I want to start exploring some kind of partnership that will allow me to slowly leave the business.
Hmm.
And I said, well, what really do you think you want to accomplish in the end? Is it really to leave the business? Or is it you're just not happy in the business and you want to be happy doing what you do every day?
Good question.
He said, I'm not really sure, but I think leave the business. So
what's the deal? What would he do?
That's why I asked the question I did. Because he really doesn't know. I mean, he has, other than buying an apartment, which in the grand scheme is not a big commitment for him, he could turn around and sell it and, you know, it's not a big deal. He's really narrowed his expenses down to the bare minimum. And he is, you know, he's done very well for himself and his dad has a trust for him and, you know, so he really doesn't need to earn money. So it's not about that, you know. He really does like the clients and the business and that sort of thing. And I think that if he were doing this in a way that felt like he was accomplishing something each day and benefiting the clients and seeing growth rather than losing assets, I think he would actually enjoy it. I really do. But he hates the idea of structure that he would have to be in charge of. You know, like he doesn't like to have a meeting with his assistant. He doesn't like to have any. But I think that when you give him structure, he is fine with it. It's not, you know, he's not a rebel in any way. So I talked to Nicholas briefly about it because he had called him as well. And Nicholas said, you know, have him do the list of things that he does each day as he does them and put them in this category of likes versus dislikes. And I had done that exercise with Eric a couple of years ago, and I found that he was answering, I told him this, I found that he was answering the questions the way he thought he should, not the way he actually felt. Yeah, and it's interesting because he showed me his current list so far, and I think now he's answering it honestly as he's doing the task. Like he'll do a task, and then he'll put it on his sheet, and I'm finding that the tasks are going in the correct, like, dislike categories based on what I know of him over the last years. Yeah. So, for instance, he chatting with a client about an idea for a stock or research, he put in the positive category, whereas, you know, getting something through the approval process and dealing with having his assistant do tasks for him are in the negative category. So it's just interesting. I mean, it's what I imagine of him. And, you know, I always tell him, I said, I think it would be so much fun to work with you with your business for me. Because I think that he would work well within the structure if it wasn't him having to oversee it. And he has a book that is so interesting and would be so much fun to work through because he has, I mean, his mutual funds are just, the list is ridiculous. he's so many unproductive assets. You know, he's really magical. But I did mention to him, I said, you know, I think that you could do really well and end up not wanting to leave the business, but you'd have to take a little step back somehow first. But I don't know if that's what your end goal is. So I just want you to think about what you really, really want out of this in the end. So he's still thinking about it.
Me too. One of the things that you can't adopt is the, we call it the Jesus complex, which is Jesus complex, where you believe you can save everyone. Okay?
Yeah, I know. I hear you. I mean, I know many years ago, my sisters told me that I have a habit of collecting needy people.
Yeah. And
it's true.
The truth is that when you see his book, you see what you could do to it.
Yeah.
For it. And you see him in his best light. But after conversation, I would not take that on.
Okay.
No, it's just too much. There'd be too much passive aggressive, too much resentment, too much. You can't save everyone.
Yeah.
And I'm like you. I mean, seriously, I had to really force myself to learn as I became more responsible with more responsibilities and larger responsibilities that I couldn't save everyone. When I had small offices and small groups, I would make a difference in their lives, but once I was gone, they collapsed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So,
but you're right. I mean, I definitely do see what I could do. It's like...
Right. And then you...
It would be so fun.
Yeah. And if he was, you know, Eric at his best, that'd be great. But Eric isn't at his best. A lot.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you'd be really frustrated.
Yeah. That's true.
So I mean... Yeah, I think he's really come to the conclusion that this is not a good idea for him. You gave me a chance to really interview him.
Yep.
And I came to the conclusion that I could not help him.
Yep.
Okay? And that's hard for
you. You can't help him.
I can't help him, and I'm a pro.
Yeah.
You know, what are you going to do part-time? You know.
Yeah.
He just had zero interest in process. It just was too confining for him. And maybe, you know, just maybe he's right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe his happiness is not in process and in helping people and in this stuff. Maybe it's in something completely different. And if he has the capital and the freedom to do that, let him go. Let him go explore that.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he runs an art gallery. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, but how do you coach someone out effectively then?
You make a deadline. Say, okay, when do you want to be done by it? That's the first thing you've got to accomplish. So you say, okay, bye. And I wouldn't make it very long. If his mind is made up, I'd say, this is July, I'd start with the end of the year. I think you're gonna see him light up. If you make it the end of 2019,
mm-hmm.
I don't think you're gonna see any light in his eyes. But if you said to him, okay, let's terminate, let's have you gone by the end of this year, 18. I think his eyes will light up. I think he'll be excited. I think he's great.
Okay, so there's one little caveat to this.
Yep.
If it wasn't his father's book of business, I think he would already be gone.
Right. So you
make responsibility to his dad.
Yeah, but what's the real responsibility? The responsibility is to the client.
Yeah.
That it be done really well. And you guarantee him that this is going to be done really well. And his clients are going to be taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
You know something? Once he's gone, you know how much he's going to care?
Not at all. I mean, you're absolutely right about that. Not at all.
None. So until then, you coddle here. Until he leaves, you coddle the hell out of him.
Okay.
Do what he wants, how he wants.
Okay.
Just coddle him. And then when he's gone, do whatever you need to do.
Okay. Okay. Good plan. I think it benefits everybody.
It does. It does.
I think it benefits everybody.
Where does the book ultimately go? I mean, are you... The easy thing for you to do is to take it, but then as the manager, is that just screams conflict of interest?
Not necessarily, because I have been, since prior to being the manager, I have been his FAP, his advisor on record should something happen to him that would inherit his book. But technically, I think you have to partner for a number of years before that actually can happen. So, I don't know. I mean, I think that that's something that I would
have. How many people work for you?
Meaning?
Definitely.
In the branch? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 5. Five.
Have a conversation with Nico.
Mm-hmm.
But what's your ambition? Where do you want to be, 10 years from now, 5 years from now? What do you want to do?
I'm not going anywhere.
Are you doing this to be an FA with some helping out Nico by being the manager?
Oh yeah. No management in my future. I mean, the only reason that I've stayed on in this position is because of Nico.
I know that. I can feel that. I just knew that answer. All right, so...
No, and I think that he loves what he does, and I think that he's really good at it. And, when Kevin told me that because I lost one person in the branch that there was a Hispanic male, that my quota of whatever diversity, I wasn't getting the regular bonuses, my pay has gone down every year, and our productivity has gone up, as far as the manager. But I'm hoping that is being transferred to Nico. You know what I mean? Because it's a complex business. I mean, that's my hope, because I'm focused on my business, and Nico's been very supportive of that. So, I do what I can here, but I do very little. Because my focus is on my business.
All right. Give me your economic breakdown for last year. What did you make from being an FA, and what did you make from being a manager?
Okay. I know you know that. I keep my spreadsheet on that. So my FA pay I mean, my manager pay. I don't have my net numbers, but was about. $60,000, and FA was about percentage was more like 350. No, it was so 300.
Okay.
I mean, you know, the manager pay is just not even, it's like $1,500 a month net. And then bonus, which is all in deferred comp, which was like not much last year.
Okay, so the truth is, this is, you know, a good year of prospecting when you make up for your manager's pay, right?
Well, yes, I mean, last year when Kevin called me and said, oh, you're not going to get this bonus and you're not going to get that bonus, I mean, I told him, I said, I've never gotten what you told me I was going to get from the start, ever. But I don't care because I'm not, you know, it's not my focus. And he said, well, you know how many clients you'd have to have, you know how much you'd have to add in revenue? I said, yes, I absolutely do. I calculate that constantly. It's one client, Kevin. I mean, it's not a big thing. So, you know.
What did he say? Did he freak out?
No, not at all. Kevin stays very, he keeps his cards very close to his chest. So, you know, he's not going to let on that he realizes that. He's, you know, oh, no. He just doesn't want me to leave because he doesn't want to have to fill another office here with a 910.
I know.
And nobody here is going to do it, and I understand that. And I would never hold that over his head. But I also make it very clear. Go ahead.
You're a very sweet person. You're very nice. You know that?
No, but it's not like, it's seriously not as if I'm having to, I did have times, I've had times in my management position where I've had to deal with things that are extraordinary, but for the most part, on a daily basis, it's minimal since he put Nico in charge of this branch.
Yeah.
It's been minimal. Yeah. And, you know, I really, it's not about being sweet. It's more like I said, I made a commitment, and I made a commitment based on certain things, and if they change, then I will have to step down. But in the meantime, they haven't. The only thing that irritates the heck out of me is that one promise that was made to me was that we would have a renovation of the office. And since then, we've gone through three regional directors, and each time a regional, they hire or bring the new one in, then it goes through the dog and pony show and Kevin's wooing, and then, oh, yeah, we got it finally approved, and then the new one comes, and we have to start the process over. So in 4 years, we've not even had paint on the walls.
Mm.
So, you know, I have a $4.9 million producer in my office that's flipping out about it. And I don't blame him. I don't blame him at all. He doesn't like bringing...
So have a serious talk with Nico about that again. In fact, have a talk with him every time you bring it up. Every time you see him.
Yeah.
Okay. Because here's what happens. Out of sight, out of mind. Out of sight, out of business.
Yeah. No, I do. I mean, I talked about the renovation. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, every single time I see them. I mean, Kevin did my annual review with Nico, and he said, you know, do you have any requests of me? And I said, you've been talking about doing an aesthetic renovation of our office, which looks like something out of the 90s and doesn't represent Miami Beach at all since I started. And it's unacceptable. And he said, okay, I'll get that done if you go to 2 management meetings a year. I agreed to it. I went to two management meetings, which were the biggest waste of my time ever. And, well, you know, the other thing is that he put on my review that I had a perceived feeling of an issue with life-work balance. In my mind, is what he put. In your mind. And he was so proud of that line that it was in my mind. And I thought, that should not be on my review, ever.
Wow.
It should never be on my review. And I've never said anything to him about it, but I told Nico, I said, that will always stick with me, that he put that on my review, because it would never go on a man's review. Ever. And I'm sure we've all experienced the same thing.
You know what's interesting is that men have no concept of what it's like to be a woman in business. They really don't. It's very, and you as females, although it's a pain, have got to, you've got to make us know what it's like, okay? And do it, and just keep doing it, because guys are idiots, and they just, I mean, I'm included, you know. I went to an EOC, you know, workshop. And I'm, you know, I'm like the rest of them grousing about it. And, you know, why do I have to go to this? And we had it, and it was, you know, a nice mixed group. And we had the leader, but you know when I learned things was in the breaks.
Mm-hmm.
And the ladies that were there were like, I asked them, I said, so did that, any of that ever happen to you? Oh, my God. You should have heard the stories.
Oh, yeah.
And they never,
plenty.
And they never tell. Of course you're very attractive. I guarantee you've got too many stupid stories. Mm-hmm. An idiot. But it was just unbelievable. And I was like, what?
Mm-hmm.
You see, I was completely, not being one of the pigs, I was completely oblivious to what goes on. And it was shocking to me. And the lack of sensitivity and understanding of work life. And having a daughter, you know, working and killing herself and having a baby and a husband that's an idiot. And, you know.
Oh, I said, I was this weekend with a very good friend of mine. She just won an award in New York for, like, women in sports and entertainment. She runs the American Airlines Arena where the Heat play. She's the general manager of the arena. I have known her for 15 years and watched her, you know, go climb that ladder, which is a very difficult ladder to climb. And everybody's always trying to hire her. And she's a lesbian with a child and a woman in sports and entertainment and all of the things you can imagine. And she was talking about it, and my husband was there. It was the three of us having dinner. And I looked at her, and I said, I'm just going to tell you, in front of Craig, it is impossible for them to understand what they're doing without us helping to educate them. For instance, my husband came home, and he said, oh, my God, we hired another woman surgeon, and of course she's pregnant. And I'm like, well, what does that mean? And he said, well, she's going to go on maternity leave. And now we're all going to have to cover her call. It just pissed me off. And I looked at him and I'm like, okay, let me just pretend that woman is your wife, me. And imagine another surgeon in your practice saying that to somebody and you overhear it. How would you feel?
Oh, good.
No, it's different. She knew that she was going to do this. I'm sorry? I mean, it was a really tough conversation, but it was like, and he said during this dinner with the three of us, he said, you know, you just don't think about it like that. You don't put yourself in these people's shoes. And so with the thing with Kevin, I mean, I went all the way to San Diego for a management meeting. Halfway there, during my layover, I get a call that our nanny quit.
Oh, shit.
And left my son in Kendall And my husband was in his clinic doing whatever he was doing at work and had to go and pick him up. And this woman was texting me that how, you know, she will never do this drive again. It was awful. She left him there. Somebody's going to have to pick him up. I am halfway to San Diego. And now I have nobody for the week. And my husband's a surgeon. It's not like he can just cancel surgery. So I'm like, I'm telling Kevin this at this management meeting. And he looks at me and he says, your nanny quit. Oh, the problems of the you know, high dollar problems.
Oh, my God.
And I literally, and I've never really, I don't talk about this. It's so mortifying to me, and I love Kevin. But I was like, I just turned around and walked away. And that's why I don't go to management meetings anymore, because that management meeting had such a bad tone, because that's how it started. And I came to the whatever award ceremony thing, and he came over and stood next to me, and proceeds to tell me his horrific story, you know, in his perception, of his partner having to take their dog to the vet, and how awful it was. And I'm just looking at him like, are you kidding me? Like, how is that, you know, your drama is fine, that your dog was sick and your partner had to take him to the vet because you're here in San Diego. But I just told you my child was left in the theater and my nanny quit and now I have nobody to take him to and from school and all that stuff. How is that? Mine is like problems of the 1% and yours is totally, we should all mourn for you. It doesn't make sense. But that's just how it is.
You know, people wouldn't believe you if you told them that story.
No, it's very, I mean, you're right. It's very true. And we had, at that manager's meeting, a 9-month pregnant manager who, you know, was saying, I hear you, you know.
The poor woman. She shouldn't have been there.
That's what I said. I'm like, why are you here? She said, well, you know, it's a mandatory, and I upgraded my plane ticket because I just knew that I wasn't going to want to fly coach all the way.
Well, her doctor would never let her fly in the 9 months.
Yeah, well, she probably wasn't 9 months pregnant. She sure didn't look 9 months pregnant. I think she was probably 7, but still.
Still, I know. No, that's right. No, I mean, it's insane. And guys, seriously, you know it now, okay? I've told you, plus you know it, all right? The answer is we're idiots, and we completely don't get it. And until you have a daughter and watching her work and trying to do this, you just don't understand it. And then listening to those, and listening to you and others, I mean, it's just, I mean, what do we have to, guys have got to become 72 before we understand.
Yeah. No, so the bottom line is that I am doing the management position because I have respect for the people that I'm working with. And I also do not want the culture of this office to change. Because
that's the other part, right?
Yeah.
You don't want another manager taking over and screwing it up.
Yeah. That's
a big part. It's almost worth it to do it for nothing, just to keep control of the culture.
Yeah. I mean, the last thing that any of us need is for this to be, you know, a mandatory meeting, dress code culture, whereas this is a Miami Beach office. It's pretty laid back, but everybody's pretty, they work hard and they're effective and productivity is pretty good. So, yeah.
Good.
Yeah. FA is definitely my role of the future. Much bigger producer is my hope. I'd love to have a team. I would love to have more than what I have to oversee from a team perspective and from a productivity perspective. So it's definitely not the direction of management.
Yeah, I think you're on the path. I think that's fine. I think you have a clear understanding of where you're going and why you're going there. And I think this is fine. I mean, I've had managers that managed forever, you know, and they were great. They never wanted anything more than their branch, and they were very, very effective at it. And
mm-hmm.
and that's great. It's great for everybody, you know?
Yeah.
And so, but I think you have to get some, you just have to make it clear the rules of the road for these guys.
Yeah.
You know, make it clear to them why you're doing it, what you're doing, and how to make you happy.
Okay.
All right, because they should want to make you happy.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't have to want to make them happy. I mean, it's a compromise. It's a balance. You know, you do things for them, but they should make you happy. And, you know, the problem with meetings is if you don't go, then somebody else doesn't go, then somebody else doesn't go, and so it becomes a waste of time, which it is probably anyway. But that's Kevin's problem. You know, if you break ranks, then everybody breaks ranks. They see you and respect you. And so that's why he's so, but you have got to lean on him now in a very nice way. Say, Kevin, a deal is a deal. Okay? I went to your meetings. You decorate my office.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And absolutely call them on it.
Yep. Okay.
Right?
Yep.
What else?
I think that, you know, that's really what's on my mind. This, mainly was this thing with Eric on how to proceed. You know.
How is your mastermind group?
I'm feeling uninspired. My mastermind group meeting was very good. I guess I'm just like I've given the next step to somebody in the group to take the task of scheduling the next meeting and dealing with this subject matter, and she seems very enthusiastic. I have not followed up, and I've heard nothing from them.
Okay, you're not going to, it's never going to happen if you turn it over to somebody else.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I feel like, I know, it's second on my hot list, by the way. I have my little yellow sheet that since the car business, I've always had my little yellow sheet of lists. And
good.
It's number 2 on my list. It's mastermind follow-up, but it's been there for weeks.
Yeah, you really, honestly, you can delegate the, let's say you were going to do it at another person's office and that you were going to present their, remember we said in the mastermind group, you come with a good idea, you come with a challenge, and then you focus on one person. It's okay to focus on that one person, but you've got to initiate the meeting.
Okay.
Okay. You've got to put on the email, tell them the date, get everybody's buy-in, and then go, and then she runs it from there. You introduce her or whatever, and then she runs it.
Okay.
But you've got to keep control of the timeline and the activity, getting everybody there and that stuff.
Okay.
Sorry. Once you're doing it for a year or two, then, and I say that without flinching, a year or two, then the others will, you might be able, what, I was just rereading my notes on that chapter on masterminds, and Bill Cates said, you know, I tried turning it over to other people, and some people are really good at it, and some people stink. And he said, you know, as long as I keep the timeline moving, then I suffer through the people that stink.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go on. But he said, until you get it into a routine where they value it, you got to really drive it.
Okay. Okay. That's fair.
But I, But in rereading, seriously, the people that do it and do it right and do it well, it's such a big payoff. It really is.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. I will be better about it.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's like it's like heaven driving managers to the meeting. You've got
right.
You gotta drive them. Drive them.
I think that the ladies were very enthusiastic and it was very good and there was a lot of accountability, which is great. I guess maybe I'm afraid of the accountability. Maybe that's the real thing for me.
Well, that's good challenge.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. Embrace it, right?
Yep.
Yep.
Will do.
Something you're uncomfortable with, then suck, you know, really go after it and say, okay, good.
Those are good things, right?
Yeah, I'm gonna be good at it. I'm really gonna be good at accountability. I'm a master of accountability.
Yeah. I like that. Master of accountability. Okay. Sure. Yeah. And they challenged me. They challenged me just to really get a better idea of what I wanted my practice to look like. And they did not like the idea of me ever partnering with anyone that was equal or higher in production than myself.
I kind of like that. I agree with them.
Yeah. They think that I should be the one in control.
Well, and I think you've played that game, and you can see how easily you fall into the role of being number two.
Yeah.
You actually like it, you know.
I like number two.
You do.
There's
a side of you that says, "Oh, this is so much easier. I can be number two."
Yeah.
But that's not where you belong, and that's not where you are now. That was your former self.
Yeah. Okay. I agree. Yeah. Well, no, but I think that it's not just that. I think that I had a conversation yesterday with a friend, and I said, you know, I think that my biggest issue has been that I don't believe myself worthy of the number one position.
That's exactly what I was just saying. Exactly.
Well, I thought you were saying that I liked to be in the number two because it was easier. But I think it's more I didn't feel worthy.
Yeah, it more fit into your self-image is what I was alluding to. Yeah, it made you feel comfortable in this.
Yes.
Oh, this is where I belong because I don't think I'm number one. I think I'm number two.
Yeah,
I once said to a guy, and I meant it at the time. I said, "You need a good number one face. You need a good face man." I said, "You're really good at getting your appointments, getting in front of them, but you have trouble closing. You need somebody to be out there representing your team." It made him so mad that he went out and hired a marketing company. He's written two books since. Then he's become the face man.
Wow. Two books since. That's inspiring.
Isn't that good?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. It's great.
And his business, of course, his business exploded. He went from a guy that was really struggling to stay in the business to one of the second biggest producer doing north of $3.5 million.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Okay. Do I need a face man? No.
No, you don't. No, no. Are you kidding?
I'm kidding.
You're the person that, you know, you're extremely attractive. You're a perfect person to be out there in front of people. You need people behind you to do your work so you can spend more time in front of people.
Mm-hmm.
Because the more people, I always felt personally that if I could be in front of somebody physically, I could close them.
Yeah, I saw
that. Yeah, I mean, my babysitters always told me how cute I was. You know? And it stuck. And I always felt like on the phone I'm just like anybody else, but in person I'm charming. and I can close them, you know?
That's such a good thing.
See, and it is. It's such a good image, see? So, and that's what you are. You're charming, you are attractive, you, in front of anybody, you can close them.
I just think about two of my not very proud moments in car sales in Charleston, South Carolina in 1989.
Why? What happened?
Because I, to this day, don't know why those people bought those two cars. Like, the guy who traded in his souped-up, beautiful truck for this Dodge Dart piece of crap used car. Ugh, I mean, he was downsizing, but we could have downsized him in a much nicer way. But there happened to be, and it's like, I'm not really proud of this at all, and it's not my way at all, but there was such a huge bonus that day, cash bonus to sell that car, and I actually sold that car, and that car left a lot, and I got the cash bonus, and I still feel bad about that guy doing that to this day. Like, that poor guy, like, what, I mean, he did it because he went, I justified it all, he was going to go get engaged, needed the money, you know, blah, blah, blah. It was transportation. Yeah. That one. And then this other guy, I don't know, I guess he really did like the maroon colored with the simulated convertible top roof car. I used to see it. He was actually an uncle of a friend of mine. I'd see him drive by their house all the time in this car, and every time I'd see him, I'd think, why did he buy that car? It's the ugliest thing I've ever seen in my life.
No.
But it was the ugliest car in the lot, so they put a cash bonus that day on it, and somehow I got that car off the lot. And he was happy. That one was happy. The other one had huge buyer's remorse. But, you know, yeah, it was awful. Okay. But I think, like, you know, I still feel guilt from those moments, but I also realize that if I really put my mind to it,
I can
close the business.
Yes, you can. And that's where you need to reach into that ability more often.
Yeah.
And put yourself in that position where you say today is cash bonus day.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and what we're doing here is doing good, whereas that was right. Here is your product, and you have to. You have to convince people they want this product. Whereas here, it's a totally different thing. And, you know, I'm doing right by the client. So I don't know where my hang-ups have been in the past, but certainly in the last year, it has changed for me. And you can see that by my net acquired assets this
year.
Well,
and I want
you to think. I've been flat for years.
I want you to think of your mastermind group or anything that you have any reluctance to follow up on as a personal challenge, okay?
Mm-hmm.
To close, okay?
Okay, yeah.
So just drive those things. Just drive them like anything else you're driving. Say, we're doing it. I love you. We're doing it. We're doing it. Stop it. No excuses. Show up.
Okay. All right.
Okay?
Yes. Well, thank you.
See that tough kid.
I will. I'm gonna go. I'm gonna go sell a Dodge Dart with paint all over it now. Terrible.
This is enough. Well, thank you. You made my day. I enjoyed it.
Thank you. All right. We'll talk soon. Okay. Bye.
Bye.